today on CodePen Radio.
Hey everybody, time for another CodePen Radio. We are now in the middle of our mini-series here on the podcast where it's not just us talking about CodePen itself, but we're inviting guests on from other businesses that we admire and similarly to us are kind of in the business of extracting money from the internet in a sense. You know, we're all kind of web software businesses or some way or another work with the internet and try to make money doing it. So I'd like to introduce you to Todd Garland from Buy Sell Ads. Hey, Todd.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me.
Good. Yeah, sure. It's Buy Sell Ads is I say Todd from Buy Sell Ads, and that's kind of the main thing. But there's so many other things that Todd, I believe, presides over, which we'll get to in a minute. But first, I'm joined by the usual suspects, Tim Sabbat.
Hi, that's me.
Yeah, and Alex Vasquez.
Hey there.
So we are the founders of CodePen, and Todd, you are the kind of the sole founder of Buy Sell Ads. Is that right?
I mean, initially I started the company, but then our first employee ended up becoming a co-founder as well.
Right. Okay. And maybe the pitch or the explanation of just so people know who we are, what you do, who we're talking to.
Yeah, sure thing. So basically, we connect quality advertisers with quality publishers, and you know, for folks like Chris with a bunch of web properties targeting web designers, developers, creators on the internet. That means we help get advertisers like, let's say, Campaign Monitor, Harvest, Slack, folks like that.
Yeah, right on. So two types of customers. I'm your customer, literally, and CodePen as well uses some kind of Buy Sell Ads tangential stuff. So I'm your customer, and Slack is your customer, and Campaign Monitor is your customer. Two different kind of types of customers, in a sense, for you.
Yeah, exactly. And so we, you know, we don't target users or track users in terms of, you know, anything behavioral or any kind of invasive privacy type things. We really just help make good matches. So we're kind of matchmakers in that sense.
The middleman between publishers, mm-hmm. and advertisers.
And we do it at scale for folks. So that's what makes the difference and makes it worthwhile for both parties.
Cool. Yeah, and when did you guys kick off? Like, when did you guys get started?
So back in 2007, I think I first started noodling around with the idea in my mind, and then officially launched in 2008.
Same year as CSS Tricks, about. So it's kind of no wonder. It was pretty early in that's one of my publications, and I've been a customer for a long time on the publisher side. So that's a lot of years, you know, in web years. And that was just you and one of your early employees, you said, became a co-founder. And then, so what was the kind of, has the growth been like since then?
Yeah. I mean, initially it was surprising, right? Like, I didn't set out to build this large company, admittedly. But what we quickly discovered is that what we were trying to do, which was to restore some quality to ad tech on the web, was something that people really wanted. You know, anytime we can go to a publisher and give them the same or increased earnings from anything other than AdSense or anything other than the other ad networks out there that haven't treated them fairly or treated them well over the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years, it's a win. And, you know, quality in advertising is unfortunately something slightly rare. And so that's why we have done well. And, you know, in terms of scale, you know, we're not Google scale, but we're fighting the good fight out there. So we're doing well.
Yeah. I mean, so it's interesting. You guys are really competing against some big guys, and it's kind of curious why you would enter a market like that. We kind of have theories on, you know, what's okay to do when you're entering a market, even if there are competitors. How do you feel about competing against guys like Google who have like unlimited resources?
You know, I love it, right? I believe that a lot of these large companies are similarly handicapped by their size as well. And so, you know, anytime I can bring a fight to someone like Google, I'm going to take it. Or anytime I can bring a fight to any publicly traded company, I'm going to take it to them. Because I believe you know, I would say like precise scale, we can win against them. And what I mean by that is, you know, we can we're not trying to deliver an advertising solution for the entire web. We're trying to deliver an advertising solution for who we believe are the best quality content creators on the web and the best advertisers. And that's not like a Google scale problem to solve. So,
gotcha. Yeah, you guys are thinking more small scale, and I get it. That's terrific. Is it intimidating, or has it been roller coaster in any way? We talk about like building out features that a large company hasn't created as like picking up pennies in front of a steamroller. I mean, they make billions of dollars. Is there some sort of like scenario that you're preparing for? Like, what if they did step into this space with some bespoke advertisement stuff, or do you guys not even consider that a threat?
Yeah, you know, like it's come and gone over the years. Google launched what's, it's very, very, very similar to what we do. I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, and they called it AdSense Direct. And what we do is help publishers sell ads directly to advertisers. So very, very similar. And, they weren't able to pull it off at Google scale. And so it, I think they shuttered it about a year later. And I think, the other thing too with competing against these super large companies is sometimes we can actually create better versions of them, which doesn't mean like we're out there, copying AdSense or Facebook ads or Twitter ads or whatever. But it allows us to observe at scale what has worked and hasn't worked, and then we can try and reinvent like a better version of AdSense, for example, which is largely what we're trying to do. We're trying to build AdSense the way that it should have been built or could have been built had we known then what we know today back then.
That's nice. So there is no like doomsday event for you, maybe, like, or there's not one that you have in mind anyway.
I mean, I certainly hope not. generally speaking, though, like, anytime that we care about the outcome for either our advertiser client or publisher client, we do well. And so I think that's like the most basic, rule of thumb that we try to stick to. And that's through and through on the team is, when we ask if something's working or if we try and pitch something new, it's not because we're looking to make a sale. We're actually trying to help them make a difference, as cheesy as that might sound.
Yeah, from our perspective, the product that we're building is maybe slightly more risky. It's funny that we came in also to a market that already existed in a sense and tried to make kind of the version of it that we wanted to make. But certainly if Google got involved in our business, it would probably not be good for us. Although I don't necessarily see that coming. I don't see necessarily a doomsday. It's not like if GitHub for us just one day said, oh, we have this kind of a live rendering version of GitHub 2 kind of thing, and be like, I don't know that they would necessarily. You still need to know Git. I don't know. We still have this kind of community thing going on. It probably wouldn't be great for us, but we're like far enough along that I don't know. Even another clone probably can't just overnight kill us. So that's
how do you guys feel when you get cloned? Out of curiosity,
There was one just the other day that was just dang near identical. the whole UI ripoff thing, and it's just we show it in Slack, and I'm sure this is no surprise to anybody, but kind of laugh about it or whatever. But everybody is aware. We don't have to have a public meeting that says, of course, let's not like crap all over it publicly. I mean, we weren't the first to this space either. We've borrowed ideas as well. Like, it's just like, just leave it alone.
Yeah. I mean, on some level, it's kind of flattering, right? Like, you're being imitated. That means you've had some sort of success, and then you've left kind of your brand on the internet. Like, those, if they're a straight up copy, like when you find a straight up copy, you know that you have to continue innovating and creating kind of a unique, more valuable solution for your customers. And so copying is never going to win your customers away. It's they're already behind the curve, because as whatever you see on CodePen is far behind the CodePen that we're actually creating behind the scenes. So I never worry about the copying. It's the large company with large resources and possibly better tech that would concern us sometimes.
Every time we think of something that you can't copy, we're always super proud of that too. I think a lot of the work Tim Savitt does is a little uncopyable with all the interesting server stuff we do. I think from a buy sell ads perspective, what you can't copy is like your relationships with campaign monitors, things like that.
Yeah, it's actually, it's interesting. I can't tell you how many times per month, and we can see it like on our server, right? Where we see like a script hitting all of our marketplace pages, and they're, I mean, I know exactly what they do. They cross-reference that with like who is data, and all of a sudden, like sometime the next week, all of our publishers get an email pitching them on something that's either, you know, closely related or some, you know, something tangential to Bicel Ads. And it's like, guys, it just doesn't work that way. Like, you have to understand, we've worked with these people for like 6, 7, 8 years sometimes. Like, but it's interesting nonetheless.
I can tell you from a publisher's perspective, not a day goes by that that you don't hear from somebody who's trying to sell inventory on something, something, something. They, you know, you can sniff it out right away because they communicate so poorly that you don't even really understand what their product is, even though you can kind of poke around and be like, oh, I see. It looks kind of like a Bicel Ads clone kind of thing. But oh, it's annoying. So what do you think about, so you said your core business is connecting advertisers and publishers. That seems to be working great. But what do you, how do you think about diversification? Is that important to your business model? Or are you trying to make money in different ways?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd say for the last few years, we've diversified based on the kinds of ads that we're selling. So for example, we were just display as recent as like 4 or 5 years ago. And then we started getting into more native stuff, which to us means anything non-standard. I guess until it becomes standard and then we have to reinvent what native is, but anything email based. So we acquired an ad network that integrates ads in email newsletters. And it follows a lot of the same ethos we have about, not algorithmically targeted. And so it's matching audiences together. We have gotten into sponsored content. I think our most our latest product is more of a performance-based cost per click offering. And so we've been expanding into different ad formats. And in terms of diversity going forward, I see that being expanded to different verticals because we're still super heavy in web design, development, all things tech. But we are starting to see pockets of other segments pop up and adopt the service. So that's kind of where we're headed.
That does seem interesting. You are so targeted at that. Has there been like stabs at, I'm sure you can imagine when you look at a different vertical, I mean, literally if you could capture another one in the same way that you captured tech, you could double your business, you know, or more.
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. Like you said earlier, a lot of the value that we've built up over the years is in our relationships, and that's something really, really hard to reproduce in a short period of time. And one way that we might look for growth is in buying some other companies in adjacent or healthy verticals that we feel as though our products are a good fit for.
Very cool. So I've got a question. You mentioned native, and that might be the answer to this, but like, I guess ad blocking has always been, but continues to be kind of a thing that I guess tech savvy folks are doing. What do you guys do to combat that? Or how do you feel about that in general?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're doing nothing to combat ad blocking. I believe that people have a right to block ads. As far as, you know, if I'm a publisher, maybe I even instruct them on how to block the ads. Because there are ways that you can serve ads to get around the ad blocking, but that shouldn't be the main reason for changing the way that you do serve ads. I don't think that third-party JavaScript on the web at the scale it's at right now is a good thing for the web. And so I am in favor of server-side ad serving. And that's one way to get around ad blocking, but I don't think you should do it just to circumvent the ad blockers, because at the end of the day, you know, it's like, I mean, where are we now? We've got like ad blocker blockers and ad blocker 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 blockers. So, yeah. Like, where does it end? You know, I think there's a huge problem with privacy on the internet. I think the larger part of the problem is that, the ad tech industry as a whole hasn't done enough to advocate on behalf of the consumer. Right? Like ad tech has believed that the market is advertisers and publishers, and that's not the case at all. It's a three-way market. There's consumers in there as well. And ad blocking companies and softwares are representing that consumer side of the market right now. And, I think ad tech at large needs to embrace that feedback that those ad blockers are bringing into our industry and figure out how to, you know, create better partnerships with the ad blocking companies so that we can do something about, you know, the bad things that happen with ads online. I mean, it's kind of crazy, right? Like, you know, we can send somebody to the moon, but we can't like block malware through an ad network.
Yeah,
like how many filters did you know, miss that ad before it got onto the user's computer, right? Because like, you know, ad tech is notorious for the ads passing through like 4, 5, 6, 7 different vendors before the user actually sees the ad. So it's like, you're telling me there's 7 companies who can't, you know, block that or figure out that something bad is happening. And
they're incentivized not to, in a sense.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I mean, just look at like a company like AppNexus this year, right? And like, you know, to be clear, I have no issues with AppNexus. I'm sure there are a lot of great people working there. You know, I think they have a great company and a solid future ahead, but like, you know, they were one of the first ad tech companies to come out publicly and say, well, a lot of what's passing through here is fraud. And they're fixing it. But at the same time, the stats released, it was something crazy. And I'm going to understate it because I don't want to misstate it, but it was something like 50% of the ads flowing through them were fraudulent.
Oh, wow. That's huge. 50%.
Wow. It's so, I mean, that's interesting because statistics wise, it's hard to get a feel for this thing, I think, because it's like you have, you know, I've heard, I've talked to Vitaly from Smashing Magazine, for example, and he's always very like, I don't know, a doomsayer on the ad blocking thing. He's, you know, whenever he cites a number, it's always like way higher than I expected to be. He's like, basically, we've been really decimated by this ad blocker thing. And then you talk to some other people and they're like, eh, I don't know. 1% loss, you know, like the trajectory doesn't look good, but overall it's not that big of a deal kind of thing. So it's hard to get the feel for how bad it's been. I suspect you have more data on this than the next guy. I don't know how much of that you're willing to share, but you know, could we get a sense for like how bad it is?
Sure. So, you know, and keep in mind, this is like a publisher by publisher kind of samples we've done. And we've seen anywhere from like 10 to 30% of traffic being blocked.
Wow.
But like at the same time, I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, and it isn't because I don't care about the publishers and them making money, but you know, if users are blocking the ads, like that's a really strong signal for us as an industry that we need to fix a lot of stuff. You know, and I do feel as though some publishers are unfairly punished by ad blockers. For example, you know, let's say I as a user am driven to install an ad blocker because YouTube thinks that I need to see a 30-second video commercial to watch a 12-second clip. You know what I mean? So I'm like, of course I don't. Like, that's just wrong. Ad blocker installed, right? And now all of a sudden ads on Chris's site are getting blocked by default as well. And so I do think there's some, you know, like the hammer being dropped by a single install punishing all the publishers that user visits isn't the right approach. I do believe a more DVR-like approach, like, okay, I'm going to record this program to skip it or whatever, right? I think it needs to be done on a non, like, not all of the ads I should see get blocked basis. But at the end of the day, like, we just have to improve, right? Like, you know, and that's why, for example, one of the properties we run, Carbon Ads, is whitelisted by AdBlock, and we didn't pay for. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that, but you know, that's nothing that we're actually like, you know, exchanging money for. And so, you know, we just have to improve ad tech.
That's cool. That's nice. Quite the endorsement if a literal ad blocker whitelists your literal ad service. I mean, wow.
Yeah, is that due to like the vetting of the ads being published on your network? Is that why?
So it's because we agree with AdBlock Plus's definition of what acceptable advertising on the web should be.
Right.
And I believe that's at acceptableads.org. You know, and we also just, you know, guarantee that we're, like you said, vetting the advertisers, vetting the publishers. We have enough of a history where, you know, our, I guess, ideals for advertising align and they're willing to do that.
Cool. That's very cool.
I think Ghostery is my favorite of the blockers, which allows you to do the site-by-site whitelist kind of thing. But not that a lot of people do that. I don't. I use Ghostery and I don't hand manage my per site one, but it's cool that it's there. But more importantly, it allows you to be like just turn on and off networks, meaning I can allow buy sell ads, which I do, but turn off things like, you know, I don't know, just go to The Verge and look at the 20 trackers there. And you're like, nope, 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 you know, and then you're like, Google Analytics, you're like, ah, that one's fine, you know, or whatever, like allow you to kind of pick and choose the ones that you think are good or bad. And then it's like, man, you let one through and it loads its own three. And you're like, oh.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. I mean, like, you can literally see like 100 to 200 different, HTTP calls when you visit a site just for advertising.
Wow. That's insane. Yeah. And so how do you guys handle your support requests and things like that? That's a big part of CodePen's business is handling support, because anytime you have kind of a technical product like you do, you end up having to deal with a lot of technical questions, but you kind of have a mix of that business where maybe people are asking questions about payments and billing or advertisers, but then also getting really technical. How do you guys handle that?
Yeah, we actually only have one person that handles support for us. And that's largely because we've been able to improve the product over time to fix a lot of the common stuff that happens and try to proactively prevent those things from happening, which I think every business, you know, wants to do. But I think just since we've been around so long, that's just the way that it's built up. And we have a lot of canned replies, right? Like, we see a lot of the same issues that maybe we hadn't fixed, and we just, there's probably like 100 of those, and we fire those off.
Wow, that's cool.
You're in the advertising business. I'm trying to find the best way to possibly say this. Like, certainly you're into it, like, right? I mean, you you enjoy the world of advertising. It's been successful for you, no doubt, and no doubt a much larger company than CodePen is. But it also is like, it feels like a weird thing to believe in, you know? Be like, not just for you, but what about the employees that work for you? How do you handle motivating them? It seems like it's different. It's like, make the world a better place, or maybe it is, you know, like through advertising. That seems weird.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's something I've definitely thought about over the years. And I think there is this general, stigma about ad tech that it's, you know, it's not sexy. And well, what, self-respecting developer would want to help build ad tech for the web? To be honest, it comes down to our customers, right? I can't tell you how excited our engineering team was when we signed Stack Exchange as a publisher, right? They're excited to work for a site that is a site they visit every day. Similarly, I can't tell you how excited account and sales folks are when, you know, we can take a company like Atlassian and deliver thousands of leads to them every month. Outcomes like that are satisfying for everybody who works here. Also, I believe just the spirit of building a company together. I don't know if you guys know this, but we're also a 100% remote team. So I'm sitting in an office now just south of Boston, but there's nobody else from BuySellAds in this building. So I think there's a few things. Like, our remote culture has been good over the years, and we've all rallied around that. There are some interesting engineering problems to solve with advertising that folks enjoy working on. And then just seeing the different outcomes, like I mentioned, with our advertisers, it's definitely rewarding.
I would think that it is, right? I mean, I've made the cliche metaphor in the past that it's like, it's a part of the circle of life of the web. It's like, there's teams out there that make products or tell stories or do journalism or whatever, that the right business model is advertising for them. It makes possible what they do. They don't have the time and energy, and nor should they, because they should focus on what they do well. To have an advertising company make that possible, I think is kind of awesome. So, it's the advertising is advertising. People like it, hate it, or whatever. But, like it or not, it kind of fuels so much good stuff.
Yeah. And, I'm not fully developed in this thought yet. Like, I need to think around some more of the nuances of it. But, if there isn't advertising on the web, the web's no longer open. Because if there isn't advertising, which has been historically the best business model on the web for the last 25 years, then, you know, how is the creation of all of this content funded? It's not going to be, people paying for access to websites isn't going to replace advertising. Like the volume just isn't there. And like what that effectively does is creates like an anti-net neutrality kind of paid highway on the web for people who can afford that.
I mean, like even if it was, I don't think it's right. Like I don't want that to be the case. I think it makes sense that I can sit around and work on my web app or my story or whatever and know that I can lean on advertising to promote it. Not necessarily as a business model, like I want to make money through advertising, but I want to use advertising to let people know about the thing that I'm building. I think that makes sense. You know, like when I was at Wufoo, it's like we worked on the product and we worked on making it better. And a little bit of like, you know, it was nice that our customers were our advertisers. And that's how it is at CodePen too, you know. But it was like, it's kind of nice to be like, I want to work on this thing and then I want to use advertising to help people find it. I think that's what I mean by the circle of life. You know, you're serving both sides. You're serving both your customers. So anyway, not to be too like, you know. We're going to ask some hard questions too here.
Well, I've actually got one for you. I had a different question prepared, but you mentioned you guys were all remote. We're a remote company too. We have 8 people in 7 different states. Can you elaborate a little bit on what that's been like, how long you guys have been doing it, how many people you have, what tools you use, that kind of stuff? Like what, it's always fascinating to see how people handle sort of the tax that you pay, for example, when you try and get a few people together and you got to set up the equipment or how do you guys handle it? Kind of go into that if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure thing. So we're, I think, 25 people now. I don't have the number of states or countries or what have you, but, we've been, we've been 85% remote throughout our entire history. And what I mean by that is we used to have a home office in Boston in the city. And at one point, there were 4 of us in that office. People's lives changed. They eventually moved closer to home or wherever. And so then we're now, as of like, you know, I think a year and a half ago, fully remote. We use a lot of tools that I think normal companies use or big companies use, even within the same building, stuff like Slack, email, obviously, any kind of video or voice chat for meetings that we need that for. I think, you know, regardless of the tools we use and the processes we have, it all just comes down to the fact that we have to focus on hiring really good communicators. If we can't communicate, then we can't be successful individually on the team. And when you're remote, that becomes really, really obvious, I feel like, or at least for us, it has. We've done in our history in 2015, we did our first meetup. So we hadn't done like the whole remote, retreat every year. We did our first one last year. Lots of stuff going on with many different of the BuySlides families this year, so we're going to punt until early 2017 for the next one. I don't know. It's just I don't have any specific reason why it's worked. I think it comes down to the people that we've hired. They're people who value, being able to put in really good work at work, but also being there for their families and having that kind of extra hour on either end of the day that goes to however they want to spend it, right? Either with their family or with work.
Yeah, that's interesting. Are there any situations in which that this hasn't worked out? Like, have you guys been bitten by the remote bug? A perfect example for us is, you know, there's always that tax you pay when you start up a screen share where like something doesn't work or network problems or whatever. Aside from that, or including that, are there any things that you wish like could be improved about remote working, or are you guys generally satisfied?
Yeah, I'd say generally satisfied. I mean, there was one situation we came across, 3-4 years ago where due to certain health insurance requirements of an individual, we weren't able to hire them. And I was really, really, really frustrated by that because I thought they were a great fit. We really wanted to hire them. It was, with this person's situation, it was a perfect fit working for a remote company. But the absence of certain health laws in certain states wouldn't allow us to do it, which was like mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, we've run into the same thing. Healthcare is very, very difficult. Maybe not preventing someone from coming on, but just getting health insurance and even getting someone who will deal with you if you're in multiple states or even countries. It's a headache.
Like, we have one person in each state. They're like, don't even want to deal with you.
Yeah.
It's wild.
So maybe we could end it with advice, if you have any, like from your perspective, looking at us as CodePen. I don't know how much you know about CodePen or whatever, but is there advice you'd have for us in running our company? And, you know, we're 8 right now and trying to grow and stuff based on your own experience.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think looking back through the years, where I feel I've made mistakes or kind of taken my eye off the ball is when I wasn't talking to people as frequently as I should. You know, I think part of my personality is to like really get involved in my work and like, you know, literally close myself off from the world and spend the day coding or something like that, which, you know, I guess you could argue I probably shouldn't be doing that. and so it's been like me fighting the urge to do the things that I love, which is, you know, writing code, but that like separates me from doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing, which is talking to people. Not even necessarily managing people, just talking to them and making sure that the communication is seamless throughout the company. A lot gets lost in translation with like the vision, our goals and all of that kind of stuff if I'm not, you know, dedicating myself to making that happen.
So this is internal talking, not even necessarily talking
exactly
to customers.
100%.
Very interesting. Okay, Todd. Well, thanks for. I should mention that we're customers of BuySellAds in more ways than one. We have ads that we run through various BuySellAds things on CodePen itself, and this podcast has ads on it through Syndicate Ads, which is a BuySellAds thing. So, you know, full disclaimer, we work with Todd a lot, but we invited him on because he runs an awesome business. And we wanted to hear about it. So, thanks so much for being on, Todd.
Cool. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me, and anyone who's listening, thank you for listening.
Cool. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Yeah.